As we have been trying every week to speak about different personalities and how they relate to the mitzvah or to the Indian of tshuva, so it happens to be this week's parasha a little bit. We're doing Ki HaMitzvah Hazos, which is for many we've shown in reference to tshuva. And we've tried to see a bit of a wide range of approaches. This is the third shiur that we're having this year. Every week we try to speak about a different personality. So we spoke about the Rav a couple of weeks ago. We spoke about Rebecca Meir Schechter, who was in the news yesterday. We spoke about him recently. He's going to Uman for Hashana for the first time in like several decades. That was a big deal in the Breslov world. And what's interesting so far, and I want to explain why we're going to speak about the Alkav Nevardek today. What's really happened so far is we've seen two Mahalkim, each of which are somewhat unique and are not what we often associate with certain ideas of tshuva. The Rav, maybe a little bit less so. The Rav speaking about how the past, how we can learn from it and gain from it towards going forward, and that the Rav definitely gave a bit of a positive twist, especially a tshuva me'ava of zedonos that lead to tzchuyos. We spoke right in back of Meir Schechter, how in a certain sense the past does not exist. A Breslover idea that sometimes the best thing to do is to do tov, and then the Rav will fall away. I want to speak today about a very, very different approach. It's an approach that comes from the world of Nevardek. I entitled this year here, Intensity and Extremism, the author of Nevardek's approach to tshuva. I want to try to, this is not one of those like really feel good kind of approaches. This is one that is intense, it is rigorous, it is extreme, it is going to be perceived. Some of the things we're going to speak about today, we're going to view as being very, very odd, and in a certain sense that may have been behind a part of it. But let me give, what I want to really sort of do today a little bit is to give some background in general to the world of Nevardek. Maybe at some point, maybe in Kaisman, we'll try to find the opportunity to spend a little bit more time going through different elements of the thought of the altar of Nevardek. It would definitely be intriguing. But to explain a little bit about what the world of Nevardek is, and then to go from there to speak a little bit about how he perceives tshuva, and it should be, again, it should present a model for us that while, and this is true, I think it's important to understand, there are certain mahalchim that a person encounters sometimes that they want to fully embrace. There are certain mahalchim that a person encounters sometimes that fully embracing it may be overwhelming. The world of Nevardek, as was initially there, is not so much around nowadays, though we have yeshivas that are continuations of the world of Nevardek, that not the same sense of real extremism, etc. But there are definitely maybe elements that we can think about a little bit. Let's start like this. The Muslim movement begins with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael has some great students. Of his Talmidim, and of especially in the earlier years of the Musar movement, there are three altars. There are three people who were uniquely significant. The altar of Kelm, the altar of Slobodka, who we spoke about last year in this slot, and the altar of Nevardek. Nevardek, the altar of Nevardek, Yosef Zaharitz, was a very, very intense figure who tried to give over to his Talmidim a degree of nothing short of, I would say, like, almost ferocious intensity. I want to give a little bit of background as to who he was. What many of us know when we hear the word Nevardek is shiftless Adam. We hear Slobodka, we think godless Adam. Those terms don't really necessarily mean that much. So I want to try to explain what that means and maybe why, at least in the case of Nevardek, it may not be entirely precise. Let me point out as follows. The Rav in Halachic Man, in source number two, the Rav is describing the Isha Halacha. The Rav is describing how a person who is really fully connected to the world of Halacha, and how the Isha Halacha, one who views the world totally through the lens of Torah, Mitzvot, Yerushalayim, etc. So the Rav understands that Halachic Man at his core is someone who's very positive. Halachic Man at his core is someone who has an optimistic outlook. He's someone who does not like focusing on death at all. And the Rav is describing why it was that when Volozhin, when the Musar movement tried to make their way into Volozhin, so Rebbeim and others were not into the Musar movement. And one of the things that the Rav writes is that, well, the Musar movement itself represented certain ideas, especially in its early years, that were at odds with how the world of Volozhin thought you should approach the world. The Musar movement, in a certain sense, was one that was the emotion of fear, the sense of loneliness, self-negation, constant self-appraisal, the consciousness of sin, that there was a certain melancholy, there was a certain lack of positivity, certain real intensity, negativity that was there initially in the Muslim movement, most represented in a certain sense by the world of Nevardek, that people, it engendered significant opposition. The Mahalach of the altar of Nevardik was going to engender real opposition. What was he really trying to do? So there's items first. His Mahalach, there are two main Sfarim that we're working off of today. One is Madregas Adam, which is a collection of his Shmuzin. The other is the fourth volume of Tumos HaMusar, which is a safe for that on the Bali Musar. So a lot of what we're saying today is based on that. The altar of Nevardik, first, before you start teaching anyone, that's a later move in life, was in his mid to late 20s. He had not yet connected to the Musar movement. His father-in-law had passed away, and he was running the business. He encounters Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He decides, and this is going to be a little bit intense, that he needs to work on himself and build himself. He goes back home, and he gives his wife the money that they have, and says, I need to go alone for a bit to work on myself. There are periods of his life in which he engages in real seclusion. He essentially locks himself, according to some of the stories, in a room for over a year. That room has two holes in it. One for milchiks, food to be brought through, and the other for fleishiks, food to be brought through. The original plan, I believe, in some of this farm, it says, was to be there for 7 years. There was something happened with the government, and he had to get out, or different versions, exactly what happened. He had to come out a little bit earlier. He was a person who, again, began trying to do things himself in a way which was very, very extreme. Even when he initially wanted to leave his family, so Bisrael Salanter, the founder of the Musar movement, cautioned him against this. Don't do this, not the right thing. But when he made his mind up, he was going to go all the way. What is the nature of his worldview? So the Altar of Nevardik understands that man, you can't have that much faith in yourself. That people, this is where the shiftless Adam comes in, there's a certain sense of lowliness. There's a certain sense of shiftless that a person should feel because, says the Altar of Nevardik, we are in a constant battle. We are in a constant fight with the Yetzer Hara. We have Midos that are going to create enormous challenges for us. He understands this was Parshas Bereishis, part of the chait of Adam HaRishon. He suggests Adam HaRishon was never really asered from eating from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra. The Bon Shalom was giving Adam HaRishon a choice. You could stay as you are and be in many ways like a malach. You could stay as you are and you could be, just don't eat from that tree and it'll all be good. You'll be holy, it'll be pure, you won't mess up, you will never taste death. But if you eat from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra, understand that your life is going to be very different, that there's going to be the risk of death, and that if you do choose that track, not to be like a malach, you eat from the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra, that's one of the first pieces in Madregas HaAdam, that if you do that, please understand that for the rest of your life, you will live in constant battle. If you succeed in that battle, so then you will emerge and be greater than Malachim. If you fail to succeed, if man is unable to weather the storm, the constant push, etc., so then a person's not going to really be able to do it. Because we're in a constant battle, so there's a need sometimes in war, in a certain sense, to do things that appear from the outside to be a little bit extreme. He understands that a person has to work very, very hard to fix their midos, or the real way to say it, shviras hamidos. In certain sifrei chasidus, you learn Baal Tanya a little bit, things like that. So our midos are not things that we have to eradicate or uproot. They're things that we have to learn how to channel. So if I have, in the thought of the Baal Tanya, if I have a certain kind of ka'as, so I have to learn how to channel that energy towards hislavas. It's not uprooting midos, it's channeling them. For the Altar of Nevardik, the way we relate to midos, a lot of this is based on the Gra. The way we relate to midos, it's shviras hamidos. I'm supposed to break my midos. I have to break my concern if I'm going to feel like I'm embarrassed. I have to break my sense of fear. It's something which is extreme at times, based on the Rambam, to break a midah. You have to go a little bit extreme. And in Nevardik, this midah of shviras hamidos is going to be taken to an extreme, not just in what they talk about, but practically what they do. So in the world of Nevardik, you would do things that would potentially embarrass you. Why? Because it was a way of breaking that midah. It's not as much only about like shiftless, it's about freeing yourself from your midos. So a real Nevardiker, he's going to, again, one of the old mices, what they would do, you're going into, at least I don't know if it's a legend really happened, you would like go into a bakery and ask at the bakery, can I please buy a hammer? and you would do these sort of like odd things. They would look at you like you were... Some of the old Navarikers, Erev Shabbos, would make sure to get their clothing all dirty before Shabbos. Just to break that sense of any desire for kavod. To break that sense of any desire for those things. Even this morning, as I was walking out, I was like, I'm not really wearing a belt right now. Like, I'm sure it may have a stain. I was like, you know what? Navarik. We're good to go. You know? If it's Slavodka, I'm like, you know, changing in. I'll wear a nice tie. This is like, I mean, whatever ties ever during the week. But I'm like, but Navarik, this is where it's at. Akadekach. Telling Maisa over, there were Talmidim in Nevardik when they wanted to break that midah, that sense of a certain kind of fear of death or things like that. You had Talmidim in Nevardik that would sneak into the Cheder Tara, they would sneak into where the Chevra Kadisha would deal with dead bodies, and they would first sit on like the area where the dead bodies, you know, would go, and then they would be Tovel in the mikvah, where there would be tovel of the dead bodies. This get very, very extreme as a way of sort of breaking a certain kind of connection. Part of that extremism is a world in which the real Maisa goes, one of them that one of them was even there once, and there was another guy from Nevardik that was also pulling the same move in the mikvah at the same time, it was dark, and they each thought they touched that there's a dead body mamish in the mikvah. And they ran out from that. It's like this is real, real intense stuff. It's real intense stuff. And in the world of Nevardik, so that's again this shviras hamidos, which meant something interesting. This the Chazon Ish really did. We spoke about it in Kaitzman. Chazon Ish was very uncomfortable with. Part of the way they understood that we break certain midos is by testing ourselves and putting us in situations in order to break them. The Chazon Ish maintained that the real way that we fix midos is dafka by keeping halacha and halacha very, very well. And halacha is built there. If you really keep halacha seriously, you follow that, that's going to be a way of improving your midos. As an example, if I work very, very hard and I spend a lot of time trying to buy a good lulav or esrog, and I find out that my esrog is really, really not kosher, and I go back, you're waiting online, sometimes you go to this place, there's like a long line for someone to check and make sure it's kosher. And at the end of you've done so, if that's how you do it, and at the end of that you find out that it's really not that it's not kosher, you have to go back and buy a new one, go over again. That's for the Chazon Ish. It's a certain shmiras halacha which does it. And the Vardak, proactive things that you can do in order to break some of those midos. So they're not the most hygienic of people at all. They're not dealing that much with the physical world. They want to be kol kulo. And why is that so? So this is where the kinach is. I don't think it's as much, at least as far as how I understand the world of Nevardik, and this is not an area of expertise. It's not a question of just trying to feel very, very low. It's rather a question of, this counts as Coke or no? It doesn't count as, I mean, I think technically it actually does count as Coke, if they made it, but there is a, but that this certain kind of, again, of Shviras Hamidos does come with a, degree of intensity. Let's go with one additional point, and this will hopefully lead a little bit towards some insights about tshuva. The intensity, looking at number 4, is at the Seder Hayom. At least in this farm that I saw, there are different descriptions as to what the Seder looked like in the Vardak, but this will give us a little bit of insight. Seder Alimud, first day would start out with regular Shas and Poskim. First Seder, morning Seder, was from 10 to 3. At 3 o'clock, there would then be a 15-minute Musar Seder, followed by Mincha. A bit of a break. From 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock was, I don't know if that's called afternoon Seder or night Seder. It's just a long Seder that is in the afternoon and the night. 3 to 9. At 9 o'clock, you would then have a half hour of Musar Seder. Then you would have Maariv. After that, you'd have at least another half hour of an intense form of like Cheshbon HaNefesh that would take place afterwards. That was a long day. They would establish groups, people again, really an intense form of introspection that would take place throughout the day. So again, that's a little bit of background as far as the world of Nevardik. You're dealing with a world which is very, very intense. You're dealing with a world that is very, very demanding. The Altar of Nevardik, one of the things he did eventually when he leaves that point of seclusion, he becomes totally focused on spreading these ideas and this Torah. Nevardik sets up lots and lots of yeshivas throughout Europe. He would send people, even when they were younger, you guys just go start a yeshiva there, you guys go start a yeshiva there. There were a couple main yeshivas, but he would send people all over the place to try and spread some of these ideas. Part of what's going on here in the Vardik, and this will be the last point before we shift to tshuva, part of what's going on is that that time in Europe, this is Stam an interesting question, that time in Europe is an era in which it is not pasha to be a from Jew. The Haskala, the enlightened ones, quote unquote, are posing a significant threat to Torah Judaism, and there are different views as to how you best counter that. There were some who were of the opinion, some even within the Bali Musar, that thought because the outside world is so tempting, so the best thing that we could do is learn how to navigate that a bit. Learn how to have a certain moderate approach, which I learned how to benefit a bit from the outside world, how to interact with the outside world, etc. The Alter Nevarik maintained that for this generation especially, while man is always caught in a certain struggle, while you can never really trust yourself, while you always have to sort of fight and things like that, that the best way, suggests the Alter Nevarik, is by doing something extreme and removing ourselves from the world entirely. He was I'll give you one last sort of thing. His, as far as bitachon goes, if we have the opportunity to talk about this, it would be fascinating. He does not really believe in the shtadlus. Initially, he had a business. He really does not believe that much in the shtadlus. I said to a couple of guys last night that when he had talmidim sometimes who would go out and start working, he would give them me'ein klalas instead of brachas. He would say the equivalent of my bracha to you is that your business fails and that you lose all of your money. That you have to go back and learn in yeshiva, or have to go back and become a rebbe. That is his. He was not a believer in the significance of a shtas at all. Again, this is an extremism here, not one that we are necessarily going to model, or that one in particular, I would think we are not going to model in our own lives. But it is again that's the world of Nevardic. And now we get into the world of tshuva. In Nevardic, in different months, they would focus on different midos, Elul time, Tishrei time. You're focusing a lot on tshuva. And in his Maimar Darchei HaTshuva, so he says a lot of things there that are very, very important. And again, some of them are going to be maybe just a bit intense. Number one, part of extremism, part of the view, again, which is somewhat extreme, of the Alter of Nevardik is one that maintains you do not really have to pace yourself so much in the process of tshuva. We will often talk about, and I happen to believe this, that healthy tshuva does demand a person pace themselves effectively. If you jump too fast, if you move too quickly, so the odds of you falling, etc., we want to be cautious, we want to be intelligent about how a person grows. That there are healthy ways to grow, and there are more, I guess, at least for me, concerning ways to grow. And the Alter Nevardik, he's going to encourage certain things that some of us would probably put in the category that, you know, we would not necessarily encourage everyone to do. He happens to believe as follows. So let me give you, I guess, it's two, maybe three elements of his thought about tshuva. Number one, the Alter Nevardik understands that all midos are really interconnected. All midos are interconnected, which means that so long as I have not really eradicated all of these bad midos from me, I'm never really going to be in a safe place. I'm really never going to be in a safe place. The mashal he gives in a bit of a different context. If you want to make your kitchen kosher, it's odd to think about Nevardik because you drink iced coffee. If anyone else is noting the whatever. I don't even like iced coffee. I'm just doing it for Nevardik reasons. If you want to make your home kosher, so you can make your home kosher by koshering most of the dishes. You can't kosher most of the pots and expect your home to now be kosher. If you want your home to now be kosher, it has to become entirely kosher. If you are violating Shabbos, you have your store open on Shabbos, so you can't suddenly just leave it open only for 2 hours on Shabbos and call that being Shomer Shabbos. Has to be. Again, everything impacts each other, and therefore, every bad midah, so long as there are bad midos, I'm really not in a great place, because everything is interconnected, which means I have to do my best. Part of the tshuva process is one that is all-inclusive. There's a model out there in tshuva, which I happen to identify with very deeply, that argues we may not be able to achieve perfection, but doesn't mean that we can't achieve tremendous progress. That even if I know that Ain't tzadik ba'aret. Everyone's going to mess up a little bit. I can't get perfection. It doesn't mean that we can't strive to have a degree of progress. For all of Nevarik, so long as there are some problems there, it's really not complete. It means I have to do my best. That also means, by the way, on the opposite end. The same way that if midas are all interconnected, and therefore as long as I have bad ones, I'm not in a great place, every time I fix a midah, it also has spillover effect. It means if I've tackled my problem with anger, that has now positioned me better to tackle lots of my other midos. Because if one bad one can spoil others, so one good one can also frame the way I relate to others. But he understands as follows, never sitting to tshuva. Not only am I engaging in a rigorous cheshbon nefesh, and not only is there a certain kind of interaction with all my midos, but I can change now. Part of tshuva, he understands, is the belief. I spoke about this in the parsha of Machshava, I think earlier this week. That part of tshuva is the belief that I can change now. Not that I can pace myself a little bit to one day change. Not that hopefully in a week from now or hopefully in a month from now. That the belief of in tshuva is the belief that right now I can totally become different. Can totally become different. If you look at... Look at source number 6. My Jacob's other my Martikan Amidos. Ha'emes me rov hergel v'vakis rak ma'ashevas. The Shaito, because we're so used to, says the author of Nevardik, because we're so used to just doing in life that which is more or less pleasant, he writes, therefore, we've lost. Nistalkami menu ha'amuna be'afsharuso ha'nisuno lo lazo v'starko ha'rasher. That because we're so used to doing that which is comfortable, we've lost our faith in our capacity to stop doing it and to be very, very different. Sometimes we look at a Rambam, when the Rambam tells us that you do have Bechira Chasid and Rishus Kol Adon Nesunalo to be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, that a person can stop doing what they're doing and you have free choice with everything, then we convince ourselves that that's not true. But he argues, Bechlal not the case. Bechlal not the case. Yodei ba'atmo, people really know ki ein davar ome bifnei haratzon. If you want something, you can change everything. You can totally, totally do it. Sometimes he writes, source number 8, sometimes we even convince ourselves that what we're doing can become like a lichachila. Sometimes we're able to convince ourselves that the Maisa, that the world was created, or Baruch Shalom knows, we're not going to have perfection. Sometimes we can take a model of like being in the middle of the road as a way of tolerating compromises. And for him, that really does have absolutely, absolutely no place. He writes as follows, again, this continuation of source number 8, Maamar Darchei Tshuva. Yimistakel heitev bedavar nira. If you look well, you're going to discover the following point. Tigam ha-metzias kenhi. She-metzias yachal adam lahachlef es atmo berega echad. In 1 second, you can radically change everything. And it's not Velosha Yechola Sazohi Dover Mailav Adam. It's not that like if you could do that, you're a great person. Every person can do that. Part of Nevardak, this is interesting. Amongst Bali Musar, so some were more catering towards an elite. They argued, I'm gonna give you a mahalak, which is only appropriate for those of a high intellectual capacity of a certain kind of level. The world of Nevardak holds everyone can do these things. And everyone can change right now where exactly they are at. Because of this, how does a person do it? If I want to change right now, it gets back to the Nevardik, there are certain midos that make it challenging for me to experience that immediate change. And if I break them right away in the process, I'll be more successful. One of those undoubtedly in the thought of Nevardik is Busha, I'm going to be embarrassed to make certain changes. And therefore, I have to know that sometimes to make those changes, if I can tackle, again, in Nevardik, it's a very, very significant midah. If I can tackle that feeling of being embarrassed, klape others, so suddenly I'm going to be able to do things because I don't care what anyone else thinks. I don't care what anyone else thinks. I want to have pure motives. And whether you think, whatever you happen to think that I am, is not going to impact me. It is not going to matter that much. I'm trying to go all the way. This he points out from the Gra in Evan Shlema, that sometimes you have to know how to do things. Af she'en darko nechona be'enei habrios. Even though people are going to look at you and say that you are crazy. In the Vardik, they tell a Maisa over that in the Vardik, in many of the Musar Yeshivas, this is Tom, interesting to know, there were two Batei Medrash. There was a regular based Medrash where they would learn morning Seder, afternoon, Gemara, Rishonim, Poskim. And there was a base HaMusar. A base HaMusar would be a different area where people would learn Musar and engage in Chasban HaNefesh. Those places, if you would walk into, one would be struck, again, in the original Musar movement, by the intensity and, in a certain sense, odd nature of what was happening. Musar would be learned by his pa'alot, spoke years ago about Rishal Salanter and Tshuva, with an intense kind of an emotional experience. And when you would do that, and you would learn with this, you would often, it was not like our Musar's Dharma, if you want, okay. You'd often learn with a field in the Vardik, you know? Break that, need that, I guess. There is you would often learn, not by sitting there like our Musar Siddharim, of learning like two guys sit down together learning Misil Sharim. In a base on Musar, you'd walk in and you have people potentially screaming a Maimer Chazal, just again and again and again. Kol HaKoes Ki Yilu Ovid Avodah Zarah, Gemara and Shabbos. And you'll just, again, yell it and yell it and yell it. Akei Kach, they tell a Maisa over once. That the altar is in the Beis HaMusar, and the guys they look like they're crazy. They're just like doing things. You know, again, they're not dressed nicely. They're mevatel themselves as far as Olam Hazeh. The poverty there was so intense. What they're eating, Olam Hazeh is not about it at all. It's a very intense, just pure ruchnius and breaking those things. And a guy walks into, and this I think is part of the yisod of the Torah of the Vardik. A guy walks into the Beis HaMusar, or Beis Medrash, and he looks at the altar of the Vardik, and he says to him, this is a place for crazy people? Like, and the altar responds, 100%. People enter crazy and they leave sane. That part of what he maintained was the following, and this is why the kinach a little bit in Shlifas HaAdam. Part of what the altar was trying to highlight was, again, it's a pessimistic view of man. The Eitz Hadas Tovara, there's Tovara mixed into us. Rav Nefesh HaChaim speaks about it also. And there's a constant battle with Yetzer Hara. And to do that, we have to go all in. The altar maintains that part of that requires breaking certain midos, but the goal is not being odd. The goal is not that people look at you as if you're, you know, a nothing, and that you look and you're not taking care of your hygiene, and you're not dressing nicely, and you're not eating that much. That's not the goal. All of those things are a means towards an end. And the end that we are striving for is back to Adam Rishon. The original choice is presented to Adam as he understands that Maisa. You could stay like a Malach, or you could choose the track of Bechira, of intense Tov Vera. And if you take that track and you tackle it, you will be greater than Malachim. There's a pessimism as far as the natural state of man. But he understands that if you go with this Mahalach, while it looks extreme, and the means are going to be extreme, that it is going to have the capacity to channel ourselves, to channel eventually, that a person can really break these things, and a person can achieve a certain point of real shleimus. The way the Rambam describes it, a lot of Rambam here going on in Madrigas Adam about Tshuva. A lot of things, the Rambam believes, I'm not Oso Aish, that I can say, like the Gemara Shana, Shinu Hashem, I'm a different person. He understands that a person can become a different person. You can, in a certain sense, reinvent yourself. But not the easier track that some will suggest of just developing a bit of a new mahalach. It's a rigorous process of breaking certain ingrained qualities that are found in man by positioning yourself, by constantly testing yourself. Proactive nisyonos. Proactive nisyonos. Different than, again, the Chazon Ish, that we become greater to keeping halacha. Chazon Ish was very much opposed to these kinds of things. Let me chazer what we did and speak about, I guess, two or three just lemaisa additional nekudas that emerge from here. Tried to highlight the mahalach of the Altan Navarra. The Navarra Yosef Yitzharitz is one of the great Baalei HaMusar. He is not entirely aligned with what Rabbi Shaul Salanter is doing. A bit of his own. I heard someone once say that the altar of Nevardik is to Musar what the Kutzker was to Chassidus. a certain kind of like extreme intense passion, not necessarily in line with what you would sometimes think of some of the core approach beliefs, but often also in line with what a lot of the core halachim are. The Altar Nevardik is representing a world that is so intensely focused on breaking who we are and breaking our bad midos. Breaking midos is what it is all about. In order to achieve a certain state, a pessimistic view of man, Yetzirah is very, very powerful. It's very different than like with Tzadok also, where Yetzirah is about learning how to channel things. This is about Yetzirah, where you're learning how to break things. Don't have confidence in yourself. They're big believers in setting up groups to work with each other. We need chizuk from others sometimes, but we need to do so in a way which is, again, some of those midos are, it's really about breaking it. He's a believer as far as tshuva goes, that again, all midos impact each other. And then in order to tackle them, I have to try to tackle all of them. The way to tackle them is very intense. The time to do it is right now, that there really is not any need for a delay or for a gradual process, as much, at least. At least as much when it comes to the world of Vardak, that chitzonius and pnimius are both very, very important. The way I look on the outside does not matter that I stop to be mevatel, who cares at all. My inside has to be entirely, entirely pure to work a lot on the kavanas and on the lishmas. Let's talk about the impact of the world of Nevardak, the impact in general, and maybe a little bit the impact for us. The world of Nevardak is not a world that is, even though you have yeshivas that are called and modeled after, that are representing this kind of a mahalach, is not there in the same kind of way at all. At least by and large. You have some old Talmidim, you have certain Bali Musar that have elements of it, but this kind of a very intense approach is not around as much. Rabbi Simcha Willig, who wrote his doctorate on the Altar of Slobodka, so again, he put it in the beginning, again, part of what Nevardak does, there's a reaction to the world of Nevardak, and again, the Altar of Slobodka represents a very, very different approach. That the way that you find greatness is not by being so pessimistic about people and always fighting and looking, but adarabba, the opposite. That what's really going to move people is a certain kind of exposure to the greatness of man, a certain kind of optimism, not the pessimism of Nevardak, but the optimism of Slobodka, and that people can really be great. Ultimately, an interesting thing, sometimes Slobodka, part of the impact of Slobodka, as far as it just being something which many people are, it pulls you towards, Slobodka produced a lot of the great Rosh Yeshiva of the last generation. So if you're Rav Ruderman in Ner Yisrael, you're Von Kuller in Lakewood, you are Beck of Kamenetsky in Torah Vadas, you are Rav Huttner in Chaim Berlin, you have a lot. Slobodka produced a lot of Chavetz Chaim. Slobodka produced a lot of the greats, which is why in many ways it's a mahalach. It also happens to be a mahalach, which again, the Nevardak world had some real opposition. The Aruch HaShulchan, who was the Rav in Nevardak at the time, he was not one of them, but did defend them a bit. There's a lot of opposition to the world of Nevardak, because again, it looks very, very odd, and it seems very, very intense. And some of the things that we're hearing are things that we associate with like a certain kind of like unhealthy extremism, but in the world of Nevardak, it's a real avoda that they had, particularly in that era. But in this era, so this, I'm gonna say two things. One of them is like a cliche kind of point, and the other is gonna be one that is less so. There is the cliche kind of a mahalach is to say, so Slobodka is about godless, and Nevardak is about shiflos, and Bizmanazah, we need a lot more godless than we do need shiflos. That happens to be true. The world of positive psychology is very powerful. Our own self-image is very, very important. If any of us either struggle or know people that struggle with their own self-confidence and the like, the world of Nevardak is probably not the mahalach to go in, and we need to give people a certain sense of confidence that they can do things. Now, while Nevardak is pessimistic, they don't believe that people can't do things. We just saw he thinks that you could do things, you can change tomorrow. But there is a certain kind of, this kind of a mahalach is one that does not work, or we would, from the best, at least for us, I think, is not really a path in avoda that we would want to choose. If a guy would walk in on Sunday morning or on Shabbos and he looks like a mess, you know, channeling his inner Nevardak, so I'm a bit proactive sometimes, I would engage him in conversation about what exactly is going on. So if it's shtick, I would say maybe not the time. If it is a... maybe not the kind of thing you want to joke about, if that's, you know, by Chaim time. Lav Dafka is it the mahalach that we really want to embrace anywhere as much. Again, the optimism of Slobodka, of believing in yourself, not the pessimism of Nevardak, of constant test and constant struggle, and the need to break, of Shvira, and things like that. So that's something which is stambu to know. it doesn't mean, I think, and maybe I'm going out on a... I don't think it means that the world of Nevardak offers us nothing. I don't think it means that if we're learning about Nevardak, what that means is that it is just something which was in the past, and it's like an interesting either Mahalach and Rosh Hashem or a bunch of historical anecdotes about the development of the Muslim movement. I do think Nevardak can offer us something, and maybe just, again, al derech avoda, point out a couple of things. The extreme eradicating of the feeling of embarrassment or things like that, so that's the kind of thing which I think is less tangible. But there is an element of Nevardak that reminds us very, very importantly not to always worry about what other people around us are going to think about us, not always worrying about the way that we are going to be perceived or the way that we always look. But there's something to be said for, again, in the pursuit of Kedusha, sometimes doing something, which means that, you know, maybe once in a while someone's going to look at me, to have the confidence to do it and not be so scared always about being embarrassed. Should a person do extreme things? I think not at all. But should a person be able to cultivate, like the Rambam writes in Siman Aleph and Shulchan Aruch, Al Yevos B'Pnei HaMalhigim, to have the confidence and always be so scared, you know, that's something which is important. It comes up as an example. I don't know. This is like a power of example. You're in the airport sometimes, and you have to daven Shacharis. And depending on where you are sometimes, so putting on your tefillin can be a little bit embarrassing, depending on who you are and where you're flying from. You're flying from in Tel Aviv, let's say, so it's probably a little bit smoother to put on your tefillin because they have a shul in the airport you can go to very comfortably. But if you're, I've had this sometimes on some of these like recruiting trips, you're flying and you're in the airport in Denver or in Atlanta or in any many places. And sometimes you have to daven shacharis there, and there could be some, you're putting on tefillin, especially in the world in which we live in where people are very sort of get nervous around planes and people that are very religious. So you're getting like, sometimes you can get a little bit embarrassed. Part of the world of, the world of Slobodka, maybe you would do it with a sense of godless, of the greatness. Sometimes for some of us, we are a little bit embarrassed sometimes. And channeling just a little bit of that Nevardak, of you know what? Even if I'm embarrassed, it's not bad to learn how to be a little bit embarrassed sometimes. That means putting on tefillin in an airport. So again, in a way which makes sense, does that mean that you should be, at that same time, you should be channeling? And Nevardak davening was a wild davening. It was not a davening of everyone like with intense seder, like sitting in very quietly. So should you in the airport channel your real Nevardak style davening and like start yelling different like psukim, things like that? Let's just say I would say no is the answer to that question. I say that with a lot of confidence and in a very strong way. The answer should be no. But to be able to live a little bit with some of that embarrassment in the world of Nevardak, so that's actually an avodah. So while it's not the main mahalach that we are encountering, is it a mahalach that sometimes is there? I think it's mahalach, but sometimes it's not that bad. It's just to be focused on ourselves, not worry about others. If I'm davening Shmon Esrei, Yamim Noraim time, and I'm going a little bit longer than maybe I normally do, and I'm just a little bit nervous, you know, what are people, just to have the ability to say, just go for it. Just go for it, and to break, and not always be so worried about what other people are thinking. There's something very, very powerful, about that. Rabbi Nachman used to say that tshuva is osios haboshas, that there's a certain kind of busha which is helpful in the process of tshuva. And in the world of Nevardak, sometimes breaking that midah is also something which is helpful in the midah of in encountering real tshuva. Shiflus does not mean that man can't be perfect. It doesn't mean that we can't be greater than Malachim. It means in thought of Nevardak that along the way sometimes there's a bit of shiftless. While not embracing it entirely, hopefully it again represented a certain kind of model, and maybe bizocha to experience the kind of tshuva ki an mitzvah hazos, the tshuva described in this week's parsha, maybe bizocha to experience that entirely. Shkaya, guys, have a wonderful, wonderful day.